Tomorrow all the things were gone. I'd worked for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife. I thank my lucky stars to be living here today, 'cause the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that. The men who died, who gave that right to me, and I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today, 'cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
Man, I am proud to be an American. How about you, Tom?
Chuck, I am too. What a great day it is here in wonderful and colorful Colorado. Certainly the land of opportunity and freedom, as evidenced by the two of us being on a station like this, talking to fellow believers about being a blessing.
Isn't that amazing? This is You Get the Blessing. You're not hearing your normal hosts, Bo Mitchell and Bob Belts, this morning. On air with you today are Chuck King. I'm standing in for Bo, and my guest today is Tom Scheffel. We like to call him Dr. Tom Scheffel, even though the people in the law profession who know him around town don't know him as Dr. Scheffel. He also teaches at Colorado Christian University, teaches our business law course, and just does a phenomenal job. Tom, how important is it that we educate our young people about what's going on in this great country?
Well, Chuck, frankly, that's not only one of the funnest things I get to do, and that is teaching students over at CCU, something that our listeners maybe need to know, and that is you are my boss in that regard. In fact, Chuck is the dean of the School of Business at Colorado Christian University, and I'd like to hear him comment on that a minute. But the fact is, it's a tremendous privilege to be dealing with young people and imbuing in them issues that will make a difference in their lives as they go out and serve him in the workplace.
You know, that that opening song that we listened to, it really is one of my favorite songs. As a matter of fact, I restrained myself from singing along so that I'd spare the radio audience of that problem. But I am proud to be an American, and I, like a lot of other people, am sometimes critical of what we're doing. But let there be no mistake made, I am proud to be an American, and I think this is the greatest country in the world. And having the privilege of being the dean at Colorado Christian University gives me an opportunity to talk to students who I think this generation doesn't understand what a privilege they have of being in this country and what a heritage they have. And one of the things that we're about at Colorado Christian University is teaching our students about that heritage and helping them go back to traditional family values and understand that this country was built upon the principles of Jesus Christ.
You know, Chuck, I couldn't agree with you anymore. When we're dealing with our students, we're talking about the law. I teach business law, as you know. But law is about our Constitution. It's about our heritage. It's about things that this country holds very, very dear. And in that regard, and I know you do the same thing, because Chuck comes into my class periodically, as you know, and you talk to my students, and I always love it when the dean steps in, because it's an opportunity to share with these young people the heritage that we have in terms of the Constitution, how our system works, rule of law. Those things are very important. A lot of young people are not getting that in their education, and they certainly are at CCU.
Well, we appreciate your saying that, Tom, and you're a big part of that. As our regular listeners know, this is You Get the Blessing. It's a show where each week the hosts interview inspiring leaders around town, and we've had some of the most inspiring leaders in Colorado, Christian leaders in Colorado, come and share their story, and that's what this is about. And I asked Tom to come today because I think he is one of Colorado's inspiring leaders. He's been active politically. He's active in the legal community. He's active in the school community. He's active in the church community. And I can boast a little bit because Tom and I go way back as partners in the practice of law. In my view, he's one of the all-time greats in the area of nonprofit law. He probably represents more nonprofits than any attorney I know. So let's launch into that topic a little bit, since we're talking about what a great country this is. And sometimes we have to remember that when we're paying our taxes, don't we?
Well, we do. And of course, what that does is sort of segues to a conversation that folks in my business and Chuck, you know, as well. Many times that brings up the issue of our favorite uncle. And of course, when I'm talking about our favorite uncle, who am I referring to?
I'm guessing that would be Uncle Sam.
That's right. Most of us, when we think in terms of a favorite uncle, we're thinking about somebody that we may receive an inheritance from. With this particular uncle, it's actually going the other way around. And so, you know, and we're going to get a chance to talk a little bit about that as well. A lot of the folks we represent in our estate planning practice have a keen interest toward ministry. They really are to the point where the Lord has blessed them, made provision for family and friends, etc. And now they're looking at how they can make a difference in the terms of nonprofits, whether it be the church or other ministries that they've been involved in. But nonprofits have reason to be at least mindful, shall we say, about their favorite uncle. Talk to me a little bit about that.
Well, absolutely, Tom. As a matter of fact, hopefully our listeners are going to get a little free legal advice today. What's going to happen with the tax situation? You are, Tom has his LLM in taxation from NYU, which is the top tax school in the country. And, he's the guy I always look to when I want to know what's going to happen tax-wise, because he keeps his ear to the ground. He's well connected to, the legislature and has a pretty good idea what's going to happen tax-wise. Of course, if you could predict it 100%, you'd be worth $1 million, wouldn't you?
Well, I really would. In fact, very purposefully, knowing you might be asking me that question, I left my crystal ball in the car. So, so the good news is, but you know, anybody that's paying attention to this area, and I know Chuck, you keep an eye on this as well, and we actually communicate on this level. Obviously, with the kind of spending that's going on and the efforts overseas in terms of our actions in both Iraq and in Afghanistan, the deficit is climbing. That's by way of understatement. And so there's really nobody that believes that tax cuts are in our future. In fact, if anything, there's concern that taxes will be going up. And this is not only in terms of income taxes, but estate taxes as well. And so that's the, I think, what's on Uncle's mind, and it's certainly what's on our minds as practitioners.
Tell me, Tom, there is a provision in the Internal Revenue Code that allows for charitable giving. Why would a country have a charitable giving provision in its tax code?
Well, I'm a huge fan of that provision. That provision's been around a long time. In fact, early in my career, I had the privilege on behalf of a nonprofit to go out to Washington, testify before one of the IRS subcommittees on this very issue, which for a young practitioner was a real thrill. One of the things that it really acknowledges is that this country is a generous country, and that while we look to government for many things, some might say too many things, but we certainly look to government to accomplish some things in terms of safety net. The nonprofits have a unique and remarkable opportunity to deal with many of the things that government either cannot get to, should not get to, or if they do get to, they'll do it inefficiently. And so that's the exciting opportunity for nonprofits. And so to enable them to do that, the tax code has facilitated our generosity by granting an exemption or deduction.
And isn't that actually a recognition of our heritage, an understanding that if you go back in time, when government didn't take care of all of these things for people, it was taken care of, as in my mind it should still be, by individuals. And to some degree, the government understands that by giving that tax break to charitable organizations, that things can get done by individuals that the government can't do, doesn't want to do, or shouldn't be doing, and doesn't do very efficiently. You and I, of course, I think are in agreement that that whole thing ought to be expanded, and we ought to go back to the days where people take care of each other. You know, if you go to the scriptures, you see that post Pentecost in the second chapter of Acts, where they're talking about the disciples all being together, and they had everything in common, and they sold their possessions and gave to those who had need. Now, some people say, well, that's like socialism or communism. Quite the opposite. That's actually what the key phrase there is, that they own their property. They had the right to own property. It was their personal choice to sell their property and help those who were in need. I think that's the scheme that God had in mind for people taking care of one another, don't you?
I really do. In fact, while Acts doesn't indicate one way or another, I have a hunch that there was no tax exemption or deduction available for those folks doing that back then.
I'm guessing that's the case, and I often wonder if we got rid of the tax exemption today, what would it do to giving in the Christian community?
Well, that's really a great question. In fact, I'm a firm believer in the notion that we as believers ought to be involved in ministry, frankly, whether or not there's a deduction. If the heart of our hearts is the heart or mind of Christ in reaching out to those less fortunate, that should be done and should be the ministry involved in, not only as individuals, but as members of ministries, whether it be our church or others. That ought to be the case, regardless of whether there's a deduction available. But the practical aspects of it are that when that deduction is compromised or eliminated or reduced, giving as a practical matter goes down. And so that's the concern that I think a lot of nonprofits have today.
And that really has something to say about the hearts of men and the sincerity of our giving efforts. Talk to me a little bit, Tom, about the responsibility of Christians in the business community and in the charitable community. The IRS, I love to use this word because it's one of those big words I know that I learned from you. The IRS says you have to have an eleemosynary purpose in order to get that tax deduction. What does eleemosynary mean?
I love that word. That's a great word, and you pronounced it perfectly, by the way. That is charitable. The fact that they look to charitable organizations to be indeed charitable is really a self-check. It's important. And unfortunately, there are scams out there. The IRS is aware of them. They spot them and deal with them periodically. My certain belief would be that anyone listening to this program would recognize that any organization that holds itself out to be engaged in charitable activities would be doing that in the name of Jesus Christ, would be doing so out of a heart of sincerity. And so to the degree that those charitable activities, whether they're ministering, whether they're feeding, whether they're educating, all those to the degree that they're being done charitably and in the name of the Lord for most of the folks we're dealing with and talking to, those things would be out of a heart of sincerity. The fact that the charitable contribution deduction can help facilitate that, I think government wisely is engaged in allowing that. And the fact that there's serious talk today about eliminating that deduction, both in terms of income tax and estate tax, is cause for at least pause, if not some alarm.
Is that something we Christians should be talking to our congressmen about?
You know, I really believe it is, because to the degree that our Congress people will weigh in on the notion that there are millions of us out here that believe that ministry should go forward and that this charitable contribution will help facilitate that, if we can get that message out, I believe they think they can take that to the Capitol and it will make a difference.
The one of the questions I have for you, Tom, you don't have to read very much today. We see the meltdown in the economy, both in terms of government corruption, corporate corruption, and unfortunately, we've seen our share of charitable organization corruption. What is the duty, in your mind, of a Christian to decide where his or her dollars are going to go? And do they have a duty of doing some due diligence to see that those dollars are spent properly?
You know, that's a great question, and I really believe they do. It gives me a chance to use another one of our favorite terms in the legal jargon, Chuck, and that's the word fiduciary. Another good one about being a trusted person. The folks that are involved in these ministries are held to a high standard of being responsible, prudent, very careful, even more careful than they would be with their own money, to the degree that they are being stewards of other people's money and ministry. So those are the folks that we're dealing with in ministry. We, as givers, any of our listeners that are giving, and I'm sure many, many, many are, have that same responsibility from a due diligence standpoint to look at the organization, make sure they're doing what they're supposed to be doing with the money. You know, the state mandates that records are available, that reports can be obtained. We have an act in Colorado that requires that. If you want to know, you can find out.
You know, I'm going to digress a moment here, but I heard the most bizarre thing said by one of our United States Congress people a few weeks ago when he was talking about the corporate meltdown and some of the problems we've had with abuses of money by CEOs of large organizations. And he said, there really ought to be a law that says that we can get rid of these CEOs. And I thought, well, there is a law. Shareholders are supposed to be responsible for reviewing the statements of organizations and making sure that the people they're hiring are doing their job. They, the shareholders and the board members can get rid of a CEO in a moment.
You know, Chuck, this show started out with one of my favorite songs, and that your segue in terms of being proud to be American just reminded me of some of the tremendous freedoms we have in this nation. But we also have, with those freedoms and opportunity, we also have responsibility. And so to the degree that we have all those laws in place to hold businesses accountable, operators of charitable organizations accountable, government officials accountable, we really have our own selves to blame if we, as voters and shareholders and givers, if we don't hold these organizations available. You're right. The laws are there. We just need to exercise them.
I'm guessing that many of our listeners serve on nonprofit boards, and I want you to address that subject in just a moment. But let me remind our listeners that you are listening to You Get the Blessing, a show where Bob Belts and Bo Mitchell each week interview inspiring leaders from our Christian community in Colorado. I'm proud to be standing in as a guest host on the show today, and my guest is Tom Scheffel, a prominent attorney in the city of Denver and in the state of Colorado, who in my mind is a true expert in the area of charitable giving and in the area of nonprofit organizations. I just want to ask you, Tom, what is the responsibility of a board member of a charitable organization? I think it seems to me that a lot of times people think, oh, wow, that's really exciting. I get to be on this board. Is that a good thing?
Well, it's an opportunity. It certainly is that. In direct answer to your question, what is the responsibility? Answer, it is important and it is increasing. The laws that govern nonprofits are really beginning to almost overlap or meld with some of the same concepts from a best practices standpoint as it relates to profit organizations or businesses. You know, we're all familiar with some of the household names that have been in the news in the last few years of this one and that one, where bad things have happened and money has been lost or money has been stolen, shareholders have been defrauded, and people have actually gone to jail in significant numbers and for significant periods of time. These same concepts are now beginning to apply in a very serious way to nonprofits, meaning when you are a steward of money that's coming in terms of gifts, and you are a steward with responsibility to make sure those monies are being used to accomplish the intended purpose that the giver had when the gift was made. If you don't do those responsibilities with integrity, don't carry them out with integrity, there can be personal liability and responsibility. And so when you sit on a board, it used to be a day, Chuck, and you remember this well, you and I have both been in practice together for a long time, there was a day when being asked to be on a board was a compliment. Always it's that, and then really nothing else to do but attend the annual dinner and kind of keep an eye on things. Today, it's a much keener responsibility, as you know.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I've sort of come to the conclusion that my real job on a board, if I serve on a board these days, is to ask the tough questions, and it doesn't always make you the most popular person in the room.
No. In fact, if anything, that's the natural tension. When you're there exercising that responsibility with integrity, the folks in charge that are actually in the ministry, you almost can become a little bit of an impediment to them. But truthfully, you're doing them a huge favor by making sure that there's that level of fidelity to the ministry.
Tom, I want to change directions here for just a moment because, well, we have the opportunity to hear about you. As I said earlier, you are one of the great leaders. I might dare say that you've been a mentor to me as I've watched you work in the Christian community and also serve as an attorney in the secular world. How hard is it to bridge that gap? You know, the standard joke, of course, we could come up with 100 attorney jokes, but the fact is, I don't know about you, but most people, when they find out I'm an attorney, say, oh, you're a Christian and an attorney?
And, of course, the follow-up joke to that is, by definition, that's an oxymoron.
That's
you can't possibly be both of the above. Actually, my experience, and I happen to know because I'm going to put the question right back to you. You and I have talked about these kinds of things on multiple occasions. It always intrigues me how the Lord leads different individuals into different walks of life. I represent a lot of nonprofits. I work with a lot of churches. There are folks like you and me, Chuck, as practicing attorneys or educators that we can interface with and therefore have an opportunity to impact or influence in the name of Christ, in some instances, these folks would never darken the door of a church, but because of what you and I do for a living, they'd be interested or listening to at least what our testimony is. And so while I often say that being a Christian is not part of my marketing plan, it's someone I know personally, and so my objective is to be a quality and competent attorney. And when that leads to someone asking what makes me really tick, then I'm happy to talk about my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. And so it's an entree in that regard.
I know, Tom, because of your large estate planning practice, you spend a lot of time with estate planning clients and people with estates from, you know, $100 million on down. How do you use your personhood as a Christian in dealing with those kinds of situations? It seems to me to be a great opportunity.
Well, it really is. And, you know, you and I work in similar areas. And as you well know, when you're talking to people about their mortality, or as we sometimes say in this business, the maturation of their estate plan, you're dealing with them at a very soft point in their lives. And while for some it's way down the road, for others it's more immediate. And so you're talking with them at a soft point, and you have an opportunity to talk with them about relevancy or relevant issues. All of us have a legacy. All of us will leave a legacy behind. And it'll be mostly what we've done. It won't frankly be what we've made. It's really what we've done. And so in that regard, there's an opportunity to talk about what will be your legacy. And obviously, for many individuals, that translates directly to what they will be doing with their abundance from a stewardship standpoint. I'd ask you the same question. How do you find the opportunity, because we work in similar areas, how do you find that same phenomenon?
You know, Tom, my experience, and both of I'm a lot older than you, but as I've gotten older, I've begun to realize that there's less and less, there are fewer lines between my professional life, my personal life. I have one calendar. It's my personal calendar. It's my calendar with my grandchildren. It's my calendar with my church. It's my calendar with my job at school. It's my calendar in the law office. And so I think that we're all, as I tell the students that I get the opportunity to talk to at Colorado Christian University, there's really only one reason to be successful in business, and that's to figure out ways to serve the Lord Jesus Christ, to be a person who can have influence on other people's lives in favor of Jesus Christ. Tom, I don't want our time together to get away without getting that free legal advice that I promised our clients.
I'm ready.
Tell me what's going to happen with estate planning. First of all, tell us what the estate tax issue is, because I know a lot of people out there who either don't have wills or have kind of avoided the subject, don't know what the tax laws are related to estates.
Well, here's the quick and dirty on it. We've been in a phase-in stage for a number of years. Congress passed a law a number of years ago, and they basically phased in this large credit that most of us are aware of. Right now, it's a very big number. It's $3.5 million, meaning if you have an estate that is less than that, and that applies to 97% of us, no estate tax. That's the case this year. Next year, the estate tax disappears completely. That's wonderful news, although there's a trade-off, because there's a special income tax capital gains provision that comes in called the carryover basis. But the very next year, if Congress does nothing, the estate tax credit will go back to where it was close to 10 years ago, and that's $1 million, which means that would be an automatic estate tax increase if Congress simply does nothing. And that's the fear. When this law was passed, the thought was, Congress will get back to this. They'll deal with this. They'll permanentize this big credit. Now we're not so sure. And with the tremendous deficits we're experiencing, and they're growing apace with the tremendous expenses overseas, there's now becoming some at least credible concern that Congress may not get to this, and we may have a look back to 10 years, so to speak, here in the next year and a half.
So as of right now, the bottom line is, if a person has an estate of $1 million or more, and that includes all the real estate, all the life insurance that passes as a result of their death, they ought to be doing some planning in order to take care of estate taxes. And there are lots of things they can do planning-wise to direct that money other places than to the government, right?
I really think that's true. They need to be sitting down with their financial advisors. Hopefully they have a team. Hopefully that would include a lawyer. But they need to be sitting down and looking at their situation because this is an uncertain time.
And finally, it's not a myth. It is a fact that next year there are no estate taxes, and people are taking some comfort in that, but many don't realize that the very next year they kick back in.
Correct. You know, it's a short-term situation, and that's exactly right. They need to be mindful of the fact that that's all that is. You know, the joke is next year is the year to die, but that's not very funny. The fact of the matter is they need to be planning properly and looking at their situation carefully.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have been listening to You Get the Blessing with Attorney Tom Scheffel. I'm sitting in this morning. My name is Chuck King. I'm sitting in for Bob Belts and Bo Mitchell as the guest host on You Get the Blessing. Thanks for listening to us today, and we hope that you'll join us again next week.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife. Thank my lucky stars to be living here today, 'cause the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that.